technology, innovation, and government. White House Chief Technology Officer Todd Park told us yesterday on the program that those are alive and well in the Obama administration.
We launched a whole effort called the Open Data Initiatives Program. And this is an effort to, in a nutshell, liberate data from the vaults of the government while rigorously protecting privacy. Data that could be used as fuel by the public, by entrepreneurs and innovators to create jobs, improve lives, and advance national priorities.
Now, President Obama may be the first president with a tech entrepreneur in chief like Todd Park. But our next guest argues that this kind of thing is the smallest part of tech and government. In fact, he argues for tech to bring on a fundamental revolution in how we do democracy in the United States. John McGinnis is the author of Accelerating Democracy, Transforming Governance Through Technology. He's a law professor at Northwestern University and joins us from the studios of WBEZ in Chicago. John, welcome to the program.
Delighted to be here.
So what would this revolution entail? You're really thinking of tech in terms of government accountability, government measurement of effectiveness of policies, way beyond simply using your smartphone to vote.
Oh, that's right. It focuses on making the government reach better results by predicting what those results are going to be. And that involves both taking the kind of data that the Obama administration discusses and using it to evaluate past policy, but also using markets to predict the results of future policy. You may have heard, of course, of the markets that are made on elections, and they turned out to be far more accurate than the pundits. Indeed, the Iowa market, in which people could bet on the vote share of the presidential candidates, was more accurate than the polls on the day before the election. And that's not surprising, because these markets force citizens to put their money where their mouth is. They accumulate all that wisdom across the country and focus it. And I think those markets could be used for policy as well. I could give an example if you were interested.
Well, just address this issue. I mean, I think a lot of people would think that turning every policy issue and electoral result into an opportunity to bet on a kind of futures market is a sort of casinoization of American democracy, and it seems to create a sort of sideshow to the essential creation of laws, that sort of thing. How is it not the case?
No, because what we're very concerned about in democracy is what are going to be the results of policy. And for instance, President Obama says that a capital gains tax increase might give us a lot of revenue and not decrease economic growth. Republicans tend to disagree. Of course, politicians have their own reasons to say something. Most of us are interested in economic growth and efficient taxes. How are we going to get these policies? And markets are the better way to predict that. We will ultimately vote ourselves. The markets aren't going to tell us how to vote, but they're going to inform us. And an informed citizenry is going to do a lot better in disciplining politicians.
There's a lot of data out there, as you described, that essentially we're awash in data and ways of measuring social policy in the United States. Who decides and what sort of constitutional changes do you envision for figuring out who decides what result is authoritative and is the kind of thing that we should act on versus all of the noise out there?
We're not going to be able to decide what is authoritative. We can't tell people in a democracy what to pay attention to. What we can do is make better mechanisms that will be self-validating. If they make a lot of right predictions, people are going to start paying a lot of attention to them. That's already happened with these electoral markets. I've watched them for many years, and it was in this last election that newspapers started to report on those and say that, well, there may be better predictions of what's going to happen than the polls. So the advantage of getting these mechanisms is that over time, people are going to pay attention to them because they work.
Do you think that eventually, using artificial intelligence, that the representative function of certain aspects of democracy could be done by robots or computer software that sort of monitors what constituents think and reports that into some sort of legislative body, that we could get rid of some of the aspects of Congress people and assembly people in the state and federal government?
I doubt that. One needs to distinguish sharply between two aspects of democracy, what one's preferences are, how much one's in favor of economic growth versus equality, versus the other important aspect of democracy. Are the policies that we think are going to accomplish their goals really going to accomplish their goals? And there's a lot of debate about that. People are interested in economic growth, but they disagree about how we're going to achieve that. Is a stimulus package going to do that? Is cutting taxes going to do that? That's a question of instrumentality. And there, I think mechanisms can be very useful in testing programs, both big data, testing how programs have worked in the past, and markets using that data and using these studies and allowing people to project them into the future.
Let's end on the two big points from your book, which I think are very thought-provoking. Number one, you suggest that the amount of social change that's taking place right now is a huge crisis for democratic institutions, and we have to act now to change them to deal with that. And number two, that the tech revolution that you envision is essentially a reassertion of conservative decentralization, that basically the tech revolution really argues for moving away from central government control and towards much more local, even hyper-local institutions?
Well, the reason, of course, you in their cell phone, it's is 1,000 times more powerful and 1,000,000 times cheaper than all the computers at MIT. And that's creating a huge, faster change in the world. There are a lot of advantages to that, but there are a lot of possible dangers to that, everything from global warming to pollution from nanotechnology, to weapons of mass destruction. And that's why we need to have a democracy that makes smarter, faster decisions to deal with the possible downsides of technological change.
All right. DeJohn McGuinness, author of Accelerating Democracy, Transforming Governance Through Technology. He's a law professor at Northwestern University. I get the sense that you're really excited about the future. True?
Yes, I think the upsides are much greater than the downsides, and that's been true of technology throughout our history.
John McGuinness, thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.